Before you listen to today's broadcast, can I ask you to do three things? First, pray with me that God would use this show to touch many lives in a lasting way. Second, if you're blessed by the broadcast, share it with others. Tell others about the Line of Fire. And third, would you pray about standing with us in support with a one-time gift or as a monthly torchbearer to help us spread the fire? If you'd like to stand with us, go to AskDrBrown.org. Click on support. Be blessed.
The Middle East is boiling. Egypt could fall into the hands of radical Muslims. How does this affect America? How does this affect Israel? Should we even care? We'll talk about it today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the line of fire.
There are riots in the streets of Egypt. There are questions whether the government of President Mubarak will survive. There are questions as to what will happen if the government falls. Will radical Muslims take over? There are questions as to whether the American government is complicit with the rebels. And the bigger question is, what is good for the Middle East? What is good for Israel? What is good for America? What is good for Egypt? We'll talk about all that. Michael Brown, welcome to the broadcast today. I'm coming away live from Dallas, Texas, which is actually expecting some bad weather in these coming days, but coming away live from Dallas. Number, as always, to call 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I'm about to introduce a special guest being down here with Dallas, in Dallas. I needed to spend some time with a dear friend and ask him to come on the radio. Couldn't be here without asking him to join me. And if you've got a question that you'd like to ask my guest, whom I'll introduce in a moment, you can post your question on Facebook, Ask Dr. Brown, Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook, as well as, of course, call us at 866-34-TRUTH. My guest with me today is Dr. Jeffrey Seif. He is the host of the international TV show Zola Levitt Presents. He's a faculty member, longtime faculty member at Christ for the Nations in Dallas, where I'm teaching this week as well. He's an adjunct professor at numerous other schools. He is highly educated and highly devoted to the Lord and highly in tune with what's happening in Israel and the world today. Jeff, thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire.
Mike, it is a pleasure to be here with you.
Thanks. I hope my introduction didn't embarrass you.
Well, it was a little overstated, but I'll try and live up to it.
All right. The world is focusing on what's happening in Egypt right now, but what's happening in Egypt is not isolated. Similar things have happened already in Tunisia, the potential of Yemen as well. So what's happening with these dictatorships being overthrown or challenged?
Well, they're crumbling. You know, for the longest, the Jews have been the problem, and the change we need is just to get the Jews to be more domesticated, who are running roughshod over all these poor Arab Muslim peoples. But now people wake up and smell the coffee and say, well, wait a minute, there's oppression going over there in culture. It has nothing to do with Jews. And in an internet world where people can get information besides going through the publicly sanctioned venues that are controlled by dictators, in these various Islamic countries, people are crying foul and organizing and hitting the streets. It has nothing to do with Jews. It's just a world that's getting sick and tired of being abused by powerful, pushy people.
All right, so there's been this notion that the problems in the Arab world and the problems in the Muslim world are all because of the Jews, in particular being in Israel, occupied territory, all the terrible things, ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians, and if there wasn't an Israel, the Arab Muslim world would be at peace. But
yeah.
That is an
fantasy,
myth.
Nonsense. Delusional disorders foisted on simple people that don't know any better by a media that wants to hop in bed with Arab oil money and the like.
All right. Tell me about some of these dictatorships, Tunisia, Egypt, Yemen. I mean, these countries are not just peaceful democracies where the people have a voice and a vote like they do in Israel, like they do in America.
No, let's stress, in Israel, yes, there is a democracy, but people come to power through political intrigue. They hold their power with an iron fist. Mubarak in Egypt has been there for the longest, grooming a crown prince's son to take over in his wake. We're not looking at democracies in the classic sense. People don't know what that is. We're looking at dynasties. We're looking at powerful people that want to make room for their own. And we're looking at poor Arab Muslims, people that are just pawns in a chess game they're powerless to control.
What about in Gaza, a place like that? Is there peace between the different Muslim factions there? I mean, Palestinian Authority, Hamas, all living together peacefully?
Well, there you go. Gaza, another fantasy. The argument was in a previous generation, by golly, if the Jews will just give back that Gaza Strip to the locals, then there'll be peace on earth and goodwill toward men. Yes, thousands of rockets later, the area was given back. It lives in dire poverty. It's kept alive by funds that are coming in from the United Nothing and other international organizations. There's infighting within. The truth of the matter is it used to be that the Palestinian Authority held sway, but then this other group, Hamas, broke away that now has control of the Gaza Strip that fights with Fatah. There's no accord to speak of. There's bad blood. There's anger and discontent. Has nothing to do with the Jews.
All right. So there's something, for whatever reason, within the Muslim world, sometimes the larger Arab world, where strife, conflict has been there. That is not the fault of the Jews, and that you have these iron-handed dictatorships where the people have very limited voice. I mean, we see even in a, quote, democracy like Iran, you have elections, people protest the outcome of the elections, violently put down. What's your sense in Egypt right now? I mean, there are lots of questions. There's questions about America's loyalty to Mubarak. Israel is surprised. It seems like the present administration is really just dissing him and wants a new regime in there. Others saying you get a new regime in there, that'll be like Khomeini and Iran, where you've got radical Muslims taking over Egypt. So do you have any take, any opinion on where this thing is going in Egypt, what the implications could be?
Well, it's kind of like wait and see, but the implications are significant in the sense that the intellectual trust for radical Islamic persuasion, that the Muslim Brotherhood, is very significant in Egypt, and radicals can take advantage of social disorientation, despair, decay, and if things spiral out of control, it makes room for totalitarian sorts to get a firmer grip. So it seems in that regard, better to find a stable Egypt. I'm not altogether sure how it's going to play out. We do know that Egypt signed a treaty with Israel, and it cost the signer his life, by the way, in a previous generation. Egypt, what will happen there, Tunisia, Yemen conceivably, Jordan, there's rumblings all over the region. I'm curious to see how it will play out.
Have you been to any of these countries, Jeff?
Not recently. I was just in the second largest Muslim country in the world last week. Guess what that country is?
Well, I can take a guess. Let our listeners think for a minute. Could it be India?
India, that's right.
The number one is Indonesia.
The first, yes. You know, it's fascinating that most people think, by the way, that Islam is just located in Arabia, which is just 17% of the world's Muslims are of Arabian extract in varying degrees. Even many Egyptians are not Arabs to speak of.
Right. And now you co-authored a book. We'll talk about it on the other side of the break, about Christians in Egypt. So you've worked closely with an Egyptian Christian. Is there a lot of poverty in Egypt? Is there a lot of popular feeling that we are being mistreated, things are not right here, and hence room for some radical Islamic movement to sweep through?
Poverty is ubiquitous in Egypt. It's everywhere to speak of. And not only is poverty generally true in Egypt, but for Christians are held down. I had co-authored a book with a fellow who wasn't able to rise up, so he comes to the States to get his PhD because he was a Christian, and he was in Egypt in a world where if you were not of Islamic extract or persuasion, then your chances of getting anywhere in life, even in a bad life there, were next to nil.
And the implications then for Christians in Egypt with all the turmoil, they've got to be kind of on edge right now.
Oh, yes, they're all over the world, too, in the Islamic world, in Iraq, Christians are being slaughtered. Recently, may they rest in peace. There was a slaughter of Christians in Egypt by individuals of the, quote, religion of peace. Islam, by the way, sets its fury on the locals. It's horrible. In fact, bombings, indiscriminate murders, and it's not just that it happens, but there's a culture that looks the other way and doesn't want to prosecute.
Right, and when a Christian who's been beaten will go to the police will often arrest that person. All right, we come back on the other side of the break. I want to talk about Christians in Egypt. Just give a little bit perspective on what life is like, because it's a story, you know, you're only hearing about because of the bombing of the cops a few weeks ago, some of the attacks around Christmas time. So it gets in the news, but this is lifestyle. Just tell us quickly the name of the book, Jeff, and what your website is.
Well, it's called Making Our Peace with the Warriors of the Sand. And it was all about building bridges to Arab Muslim peoples, not casting aspersions on them. Making Our Peace with the Warriors of the Sand. If folk want to go to my website with the television, Zola Levitt Presents, that's www.levitt.com, L-E-V-I-T-T.com.
All right. We'll be back with more with Jeff Seifer. We're also going to talk about a book he wrote in terms of Islam in Europe. A whole lot more to come. Stay with us. Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown coming away live from Dallas, Texas. If you're in the greater Dallas area, hearing my voice tomorrow night, Christ for the Nations, 7 p.m. service, open to the public. By all means, join us if you can. Also this Saturday, February 5th, we'll be doing an all-day seminar, God Has a Better Way, working with pastors and churches in Burke, North Carolina, dealing with issues having to do with homosexuality, why you should care about this, how to help people who are struggling with unwanted same-sex attractions. That'll be this Saturday in Burke. For info, just go to my website, askdrbrown.org. Right on the homepage, if you just scroll down, you'll find more information about where I'll be speaking these next few days. It is my joy to have with me on the air today a dear friend of many years, a co-worker of the gospel, a fellow Jewish believer in Jesus, Dr. Jeff Seif. Jeff, thanks again for being with us today.
Pleasure.
Before we get into a little bit more depth about what happens to the Christians in Egypt and the situation there, and then I also want to talk about Islam growing in Europe, just a few questions that have been posted to us. I want to ask you a couple. Todd would like to know, Jeff, and I'm not going to answer this. This is yours. Should we expect a European Antichrist or a Muslim one?
Well, thanks, Todd. You know, there's been a lot of popular rhetoric around because of concerns about Islam and Islamic Antichrist. But when I speak to scholars based on Daniel and others, it seems that a European is the way to go. I haven't heard anybody that is game to explore eschatology formally. None of the big heavy hitters are opting for an Islamic Antichrist.
All right.
In fact, Joel Rosenberg thought that in a coming war, you know, they'll kind of be knocked out of kilter. And no, a European is where people are still looking.
All right. Is Islam the new communist threat? This is from Michael, bringing us into an all-out war, or is there any hope of a moderate Muslim faith?
Well, there's a great question. You know, kudos to the moderates. I publish articles by moderates, by the way, even though I'm not, you know, Muslim per se, in our ministry's magazine. We should do everything we can to support moderate Muslims. But I wonder if sometimes those voices are too little too late. It's these moderate voices that are rising up in places like Iran that are getting squelched. And it may be that one of the benefits out of this madness, as the world settles down, will be that more moderate voices will be heard and have some superintendency in the Islamic world.
The question is, can that really hold? Just like liberal Christianity doesn't really hold people because it moves away from the fundamentals of the faith, can a non-fundamentalist Islam really hold Muslims? By the way, as we're talking, just got an email from Ron Cantor, mutual friend of ours, former student of mine in Israel, and he said, weighing in on Egypt from an Israeli point of view, I thought he was sending a specific note to me, but it's his newsletter that he just sent out. And he asked the question, what is worse than a dictatorship? an Islamic extremist theocracy.
Yes.
Let's just talk about what we do know right now. What has life in Egypt been like for the Coptic Christians? Roughly 10% of the national population have existed centuries and centuries there. What is life like, and what was the goal of the book you co-authored on the subject?
Well, the Coptic Christians in Egypt are discriminated against, that they are in an Islamic world where they're tolerated at best, but their ability to move up is greatly hindered, and there are ubiquitous examples of imprisonments, tortures, and so forth. It is not a fluid society like America, where in America you can be born on the lower side of the tracks, but by good investments, education, dint of determination, you can move up. No, it's a stratified culture, and if you are not of the Islamic persuasion, you are held down. And this co-author of a book that I wrote, he is of Coptic Christian extract, and he wanted to go farther, and there was no place to go there. One can visit the Voice of the Martyrs that follows martyrdom amongst Christians and discover stories of Christians that are being held back in Egypt.
And, what about just some of the poverty in which they live? Just reading about some of them just living as trash collectors and things like that, or living in the dumps and making their living like that, or surviving like that. Are those exaggerated reports? Or is it really that bad?
No. It's hard to imagine. It's hard to describe. Tent cities, rummaging amongst garbage and the like, but that is so much the world.
And in a way, though, with Christians within Egypt or in minorities in other countries like that, they are kept down by the society, and that's just inherited from generation to generation.
Yes, that's true, because they are the other. But quite frankly, it's not like that Muslims in other countries are faring a whole lot better necessarily. That it is true, if you took fossil fuels out of the equation and the kind of money that's generated in Islamic-controlled countries because of that, you would find poverty that is grinding. It is ubiquitous. In fact, if you take the gross national product of Israel, what's produced in that little country, it's greater than all the Arab countries round about it combined. The standard of living in Israel for Arabs there is much greater than elsewhere in the Arab world, where there's access to education, there's access to medication, where there isn't grinding poverty like you find in the in Cairo and elsewhere, all over the Arab world, over, because of a culture that's indifferent toward its underclass. Israel, however, is informed by Torah ethics, where there's a premium on virtue and value and human dignity, giving the poor access to resources they get nowhere else. That's a story never told.
Talk to me just a little bit more about the treatment of the underclass in the Islamic world, and what is the theology or the mindset that fuels that?
Well, historically, when Islam conquered, and by the way, Islam didn't just pass out tracts and woe people by the higher ethics. It was done by dint of determination and the sword. People were put to the sword. They were given the option either to become a Muslim, and if they didn't become a Muslim, they were called dhimmis. There's a status called dhimmitude, and this was extended to Jews and to Christians who were construed as people of the book, inferiors, to be sure. If you were a dhimmi, the taxes could be up to 50%. The nominal, pathetic jobs were yours, garbage collectors and so forth. There were laws enacted where one out of every five boys could be taken and conscripted by force to serve lifelong in military units for Muslim armies. These were called Janissaries. People were taken off into slavery. In fact, when Islam had expanded into Europe, we know today countries like Czechoslovakia, Yugoslavia, we speak of Slavic countries. It's from a word for slave. Slavic and slaver cut from the same cloth, and harks to the era when, under Islamic domination, the European population was hived off for servitude to their masters. Horrible. Horrible. And that's a story that's never told.
Yeah, well, I remember being in England years ago, and I saw a show. I'm talking about in the 80s, and I saw a show, and it was about how all of the positive things that existed in British culture, from baths to the educational system, how they all went back to Islam. And I thought, I cannot believe this is airing on TV in England. Okay, we come back. Let's talk about Islam in Europe, the book that you wrote about it. My guest, Dr. Jeff Seif, his website, Levitt, with two T's, levitt.com. A whole lot more to come. Stay with us. It is my joy to be coming your way live from Dallas, Texas. Michael Brown, glad to be with you on the Line of Fire today. 866-34-TRUTH. I've got a bunch of questions to ask my special guest, Dr. Jeffrey Seif, today. All of you that have seen Zola Levitt Presents, the TV show, then you've seen Jeff for some years now doing a fabulous job. Maybe you've read some of his books. Maybe you've heard him speak. But it's my joy to have him on the radio. I've got a bunch of questions to ask him, questions that have been posted to ask him. But if you'd like to call in with a question or take issue with anything he said, 866-348-7884. There's still time to post some questions on the Ask Dr. Brown page on Facebook. That's Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. All right, Jeff, before we talk about Islam in Europe, let's get our mutual blood boiling, all right?
Okay.
Let me set this up. I was struck during the protests of the war, Israel's war against Hamas, Operation Cast Lead. I was struck by the protests taking place in New York, the anti-Israel protests. Not just the level of rhetoric, you know, we need bigger ovens for the Jews, that kind of stuff. But there would be like radical feminists and gay activists marching against Israel on behalf of Hamas.
That is so stupid.
Well, tell our dear listeners why it's stupid.
Well, it's stupid, first of all, that if one would look and see the plight of women in Islamic countries right off the bat, a woman can go to Harvard University, graduate at the top of the class, get a PhD, and go to Saudi Arabia. She can't even get a driver's license. And furthermore, if one wanted to look at the plight of homosexual people in Islamic cultures, to think that individuals at the radical left, the homosexual left, the feminist left, protesting against the Jews and in favor of Islamic persuasion, to me, it epitomizes insanity.
I mean, look, you've got Israel with Golda Meir, who's been a prime minister. You've got as many liberated women as you're going to find, for better or worse.
Right.
You've got, sadly, gay pride marches in Israel. And yet, Israel is the monster here. So here's a question that Otto posted on the Ask Dr. Brown page on Facebook, and I'm sure asked in all sincerity. There are two parts, but I'm going to focus on the second. Number one, if someone does not support Israel, are they disobeying Scripture? Number two, is it true that is it true that Palestinian Christians are getting killed by Israel? If so, how do we support Israel when they have Christian blood on their hands? Is it true that Israel is killing Palestinian Christians?
Fantasy. No, Israel's not singling out Christians for slaughter. Christians are loved in Israel. Israelis love Christian people because it's Christians that have been more so supportive on the whole of Jews in Israel than has secular culture. So fantasy to think that Christianity is being killed in terms of singling out of Palestinian Christians in Israel, no, not to my knowledge in any way, shape, or form.
All right. Well, what's happened in Bethlehem is there's more and more Muslim control in Bethlehem. What's happened to the Christian or professing
Christian
population?
Well, I'll tell you, I've been there many times. They're getting driven out of Israel, out of Bethlehem, but not because of Jews. Right now, I believe that ever since Bethlehem, so-called, was annexed as a holding of the Palestinian Authority, there has been this flight out of Bethlehem to the two now, I think there's maybe 15% of the population that's left there is Christian. It's peaceful there, however, but Christians are fleeing because as it comes under Islamic control, various industries are seized and they can't make a way for themselves in that world. I have a friend who ministers over there, a Palestinian so-called Christian. His name is Nahum Curry. He pastors Bethlehem Baptist Church. He's been firebombed 14 times and has been shot.
Wait, the Israelis are firebombing him?
Not the Israelis. It's the locals. It's Arab Muslims that are disconcerted with him.
Yeah, I mean, that's
14 times the Baptist church has been firebombed. He's been shot. He could take off his shirt and show you his scars. You know who introduced him to me? Rosemary Schindler, who is related by marriage into the Oscar Schindler family, you know, Schindler's List. She told me, she said, Jeffrey, you need to go here and meet Pastor Curry. And I did. And when I'm in Israel, I always take groups to see him because I want people to support him. He's a voice in that wilderness standing up for Jesus in a world that's not very easy to do.
What about Palestinian Christian liberties, say under the Palestinian Authority or under Hamas? I mean, certainly their Arab brothers are affirming of their right to be Christians, or say for a Muslim to convert to Christianity within PA-controlled territories.
Well, listen, I'm talking, Mike, about Christians that live under Palestinian Authority, firebombed, difficulties, and all the rest.
Yeah, I mean, it's... It is so profoundly grievous to me when I will hear Christians, especially evangelical Christians in America, they want to side for justice, they want to side with the oppressed and all this. They forget about all the victims, terrorist victims in Israel.
Right. You know,
they probably never visit Yad Vashem and see Holocaust
right.
Memorial, any of that. And then they'll sit with people, you know, in need, living in Gaza or other places, and they'll tell their stories about what the monstrous Israelis do. And then these people will come back fighting against Israel and being champions of Muslim radicals and doing it in the name of justice and doing it in the name of Jesus. It's grievous to me. Of course God cares about everyone and wants to have mercy and compassion on everyone.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you the way I look at it, Mike. You take these Christian leaders, bishops, theologians, and the like, they all ought to be sued for malpractice. That is so stupid to pin the tail on the Jewish donkey. It's an age-old story. That's why you wrote the book. Well, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Our hands are stained with blood. Shame on them. They should know better. They should look more closely. Jews, we have our culprits. That's true. We deal with them. But we're a decent people, a good people. Jews in Israel tend to be just, equitable, and fair. And they're not treated that way by these brain-dead apes that castigate them. Bishop, reverend, theologian, call them what they will. They ought to be sued for malpractice.
All right, sued for malpractice, brain-dead apes. Perhaps you could be a little bit more direct.
I want to make sure I'm speaking clearly because my blood boils because it is tragic the way Jews are forever lambasted, castigated, and thank God for God that he stands behind Israel, because to tell you the truth, it is not easy being a Jew. Jews are over there making a bid in a world that is wrought with uncertainties and perils. It's a just society. It's a democracy. It's fulfilling Bible prophecy, and Christians should stand behind it, not against it.
So do you think that you can be a scriptural Christian in obedience to God's word and stand against modern Israel?
I don't know what word someone's reading. The Bible says pray for the peace of Jerusalem. That doesn't mean that Jerusalem has to be perfect. It doesn't mean you support the prime minister. But in principle, it means you support a Jewish presence in a place. And if someone does not do that, they have to answer to a God who talks about that on every page of the Bible.
Yeah, I mean, the fact is, God has never supported Israel because Israel was perfect. God
never.
Has never been with the Jewish people because we were perfect.
And he hasn't supported me or you because of perfection either.
Exactly. So it's simply because of election and God's purposes. And that's what I tell people. The issue with anti-Semitism is has nothing to do with Israel. It has to do with God. It's an attack on God and his purposes. And it just happens that people he chose have descended down as the people of Israel, the Jewish people, and salvation has come to the world through them. Okay, when we get back, we will talk about Islam in Europe. And what's the name of the book you wrote on that subject?
Well, it's a television series, Bad Moon Rising.
Ah, okay, television series, got it. But I heard you preach some of it. It's awesome. Right, back with more. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you with another special guest. I've got my friend Dr. Jeff Seif on the line with me here in Dallas, but I'm going to interrupt our interview for one moment to bring on another guest, a mutual friend of ours, live from Israel. I was going to say Dr. Ron Cantor. You haven't earned your honorary doctorate, have you yet, Ron?
I'm working on it. By the year, if I keep going at this pace, they tell me by the next millennium, I'll be halfway there.
Awesome. Ron's been a dear friend for many, many years. Hey, Ron, I'm teaching at Christ for the Nations in Dallas this week, so we've got a bit of a common history with
that.
And
I'm a CFNI grad.
That's it, from New York. So Ron, and we've got Jeff listening on the other line here. Give us, in short, your perspective on what's happening in Egypt from the viewpoint of an Israeli.
Well, quite honestly, from a natural perspective, it's scary. We've just seen what could be the beginning of a revolution in Lebanon, where the Lebanese army is clearly weaker than Iranian-backed Hezbollah. So on our northern border, we have a new regimen committed to our destruction. And now we're looking at Egypt, that we've had a 30-plus year peace agreement. It hasn't been a great peace. We don't hang out. We don't do Passover dinner together. But we don't bomb each other. It's been good for over 30 years. And now you have an uprising. Now, I was born in the U.S. living in Israel. I love democracy. I love freedom. I believe in civil rights. And I think it's horrible that the Egyptian people have had to live under dictatorship. But you know, what's worse than a dictatorship is a Muslim fundamentalist government that controls every detail of your life. Secret police, false arrests, forced coerced confessions. That's what could happen. Now, I'm not saying it will happen, but here in Israel, we believe it could happen because I guess in the West, people just don't understand in the Middle East how popular extremism is.
All right, hey, Ron, let me jump in.
Go ahead.
Jeff, what's your take on what Ron's saying?
Well, ditto all of it. I mean, he's right. Saying what I'd want to say better than I can say it, and calmer, too, I might add.
All right. Hey, listen, we've got three Jews here on at once. This may be a first in our broadcasting history. But Ron, paint a picture of how popular, what in the West we look at radical, fanatical Islam, and this is not what Islam is really like. Islam is a peaceful religion. Of course, we know there are peace-loving Muslims and moderate Muslims, but, you know, Osama bin Laden, these guys, they're just extreme out there. You're saying that radical Islam is very
popular. The problem
is
that they're very attractive, though. You know, think about this. You're a Jets fan, and it's 30 years ago, and you're playing the Baltimore Colts. I hope people can relate to this. I don't know how old our audience is. But, you know, the Jets were huge, huge underdogs. And Joe Namath says, we're going to win. I guarantee a win. And he goes out there and he beats the Colts.
Yeah.
Well, to the Arabs of the Middle East who have been taught all their lives, America hates you. America wants to kill you. America hates Islam. America wants to destroy Islam. So even though they may not have been radical at the time, for Osama bin Laden to infiltrate America, to take down the World Trade Center, to send a plane into the most significant military symbol in America, the Pentagon, that was just, for them, a heroic moment. And that it was probably one of the greatest recruiting moments for radical Islam in the history of the world. So you have people in this part of the world, they're not thinking with a Western mindset. They didn't grow up in New Jersey or Kansas or California. They grew up being indoctrinated all their lives that America is evil and America is against you. And so that's point one. Point two is then you have people who look at their lives and they say, I have no future. I can't make money. I can't make a good living. Life is difficult. And then along comes radical Islam that says, well, we're the answer. So, again,
even
if you look at it through
Islam,
their eyes.
Even though radical Islam in the end could oppress them all the more, they present themselves like this. Hey, last question, Ron, before we have to run. What's the general feeling in Israel? Are the Israelis very unsettled by what's happening?
Well, let me just give this footnote real quick to what you just said. The reason it is attractive to these young Muslim men is because it gives them identity. It gives them a sense of structure. And when the radicals come to them, they don't say, hey, we want to enslave you. In fact, remember, it was you who once taught, the devil doesn't come to your door and say, hey, I'm here to kill you, let me in. We'd close the door. He comes to deceive. Well, when they recruit, what they do is they talk about, we're with you. We're like you. We're fighting against the Hosni Mubarak. We're fighting against the Saddam Husseins. We want to free you from oppression. And then they buy into that, and then they end up becoming the oppressors.
We got to run, but thanks for weighing in. And this really reminds us to pray for an outpouring of mercy in the Muslim world. Thanks for calling in, Ron. We'll put your website up.
Don't forget us here in Israel.
All right, thanks. Well, I cannot believe 1 hour is almost gone. Too many good guests, too much to talk about. Michael Brown, thank you for joining us today on The Line of Fire. Remember, for many, many more resources, go to our website, askdrbrown.org. That's askdrbrown.org. If you click on The Line of Fire, you'll get a link to Dr. Jeff Seif's website, levitt.com, for Zola Levitt Ministries and all the tremendous TV work they're doing. We also put up a link with our friend Ron Cantor that just called in with his perspective from Israel and what's happening in the Middle East. Hey, Jeff, I've talked about this two or three times now. I don't want to pass by without discussing it. You did a TV series. I heard some of your teaching on it that was phenomenal about Islam in Europe. What were you seeking to convey with that, and how might that also apply to America?
Mike, it's a warning cross. It's a warning shot across the bow that we can't be too sheepish. That there is an agenda. There's a swelling population of Muslim peoples in Europe that are bent on grabbing a hold of European culture, and that we need to be aware of that and decide what to do about it. So I was principally concerned about that. Today, the most popular name for boys in certain countries in Europe is Mohammed. Growing in leaps and bounds. I heard, in fact, in 20 years here in America, the Muslim population will be approaching 25%. So we're dealing with a changing world, and we have to decide what kind of culture we want. Sharia culture doesn't work for me. It's not the Judeo-Christian way. And we need to figure out how to deal with this.
What did Yasser Arafat say about the greatest weapon that
he said? The Muslim's greatest weapon in the world is a woman's womb, and simply by the vote.
So just reproducing.
Just reproducing, and listen, America's a place for people to come with any religion, no religion, but we have a decidedly Judeo-Christian way of life here. I want to see that remain during the course of my life, and I'm sure that it will, but for my children and my grandchildren. And in Europe, the question was rising, goodness gracious, that Islam had been so aggressive and expansionist there. Goodness, European countries could just fold under Sharia law.
Yeah, and little by little, there are Europeans that are recognizing what's happening. And it's not a matter of loving Muslim people. It's saying, hey, we don't want Islam to take over our country. And when you talk about Islamic names, Muhammad recently passed Jack as the number one name in England, number one boy's name in England.
Yeah. So. And it seems to me that the British, in certain respects, are so foolish, they're proud of it. I remember back in the day when Britain took a stand, and God bless for not discriminating against foreigners. But my God, we're giving away the shop. In fact, the largest Islamic mosque in the world now, London, England.
And, oh, boy. And this is not by accident. Just like Christians want to see the world evangelized, Muslims want to see the world come in subjection to Islam. Hey, Jeff, we are out of time. I hope folks tune into your TV show. I'm sure far more folks watch your TV show than listen to me on radio. You've been doing a terrific job, Jeff. Levitt.com, that's with two T's. Thanks again for joining us, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Mark.
All right, friends, let me give you my bottom line. Jesus died for Muslims. Jesus died for Jews. Jesus died for people of every background, every faith, every non-faith. But when we see situations like this in Egypt, when we see the unrest that's there, the turmoil, when we hear about some of the authoritarian regimes and even the conflicts within the nations, Rather than that getting you mad at Muslims or stirred up against Muslims, it should get you praying that the mercy of God would be poured out on the Muslim world, that salvation would come to the Muslim world, and that Christians, those who know Jesus within the Muslim world, would stand strong in the midst of persecution, in the midst of opposition, that their witness would go forth, that a testimony of life would go forth, and that there would be a massive harvest of Muslims, the likes of which history has never seen. I believe it's time.